The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Presentations and interviews with leading attorneys and industry professionals. On this edition, Brian Rubin of Sutherland Aspill & Brennan on issues broker-dealers need to consider when deciding whether to self-report problems. The opinions expressed by guests interviewed on LexisNexis Legal Podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of Reed Elsevier Incorporated, LexisNexis, subsidiary companies, shareholders, employees, or customers, and should not be considered legal advice. Brian Rubin, a member of Sutherland Aspill & Brennan's litigation practice group, represents broker-dealers, investment advisors, investment companies, public companies, and individuals being examined, investigated, and prosecuted by the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and states. He also represents securities clients in litigation and arbitration and counsels them on regulatory and compliance matters. In addition, Brian conducts internal investigations. Recently, he represented firms and individuals on matters involving variable product and mutual fund transactions, advertising, email retention, markups, markdowns, fee in lieu of commission accounts, market timing, late trading, 529 plan, sales, and supervision. Mr. Rubin, thanks very much for being part of this LexisNexis Legal Podcast.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you.
I understand that both the SEC and FINRA have policies in place, as well as some recent revisions involving voluntary disclosure of past or potential securities law violations, right?
Yes.
What are some of the things that firms have to consider when deciding whether or not to self-report?
One of the issues that firms have to consider is the impact of the problem, how significant it is. Another thing that they have to consider is whether the regulators will ultimately find out about the issue themselves, because if the regulators won't find out about the problem and the firm can fix the problem, there may not ultimately be a need to self-report.
Well, talk about some of the differences between FINRA's standards and the SEC standards.
One difference is that FINRA does not give credit to firms based on the firm's prior history of not having disciplinary actions. The SEC, on the other hand, does take into account whether the firm has had prior problems. There are a number of other differences, but ultimately the firms would weigh the same factors when determining how to self-report and whether to self-report. The differences sometimes go toward how the SEC versus FINRA will take into account the self-reporting in terms of the types of sanctions or the types of remedial efforts they order.
And looking at those standards, you know, when does a firm self-report? When would it make the most sense?
Firms have to weigh whether it makes sense for them to self-report. The SEC and FINRA do not have specific requirements on self-reporting, and that's in contrast to the New York Stock Exchange, which does have a specific requirement ordering firms to self-report violations.
Now, what if a problem is detected by a regulator, but the firm hasn't discovered it? Are there different standards between the two organizations?
If the problem has already been detected by the regulator, FINRA would expect the firm to take extraordinary steps to deal with the problem. Even though FINRA has already discovered it, the next issue becomes what is the firm going to do about the problem. And similarly, the SEC would look at whether the firm voluntarily starts to take remedial action in order to figure out whether the SEC should give the firm some sort of credit.
What would be an example of an extraordinary step?
An extraordinary step would be to, for example, remediate customers if there's customer harm, or put in place new policies and procedures if that's where the problem is.
What type of self-reporting would warrant, you know, getting credit?
For both the SEC and FINRA, they want explicit details of the issue. For example, how it was uncovered, how large the problem is and ultimately what the firm is going to do about the issue. One of the issues that both FINRA and the SEC look at is if a firm comes in and says, hey, here's a problem that we have, but it's also an industry-wide problem, and you, the SEC, or you, FINRA, should be aware of the problem. In a circumstance like that, both FINRA and the SEC will probably give some sort of credit to the firm for stepping up that way.
Say, for example, there's no disciplinary history. What effect might that have?
Under FINRA cases, if there's no disciplinary history that the firm has previously, that is not taken into account. FINRA's position is that we don't expect firms to have disciplinary history. We expect firms to be following our rules all the time. The SEC, on the other hand, does look into whether the firm has a history of compliance and whether they've adequately followed the rules previously.
What if, say, a violation was the result of culpable behavior and not a technical oversight?
FINRA doesn't really address that issue in their guidance. The SEC, on the other hand, does weigh culpability in determining how much credit firms should receive if they do end up self-reporting.
What about the differences when we're talking about self-reporting actions involving investors?
Under FINRA standards, credit may be given if there's extraordinary remediation. So, for example, if the firm discovers that there are problems that impact directly investors and the firm, for example, remediates or pays the customers back, that will be one of the factors that FINRA takes into account. Similarly, the SEC looks at whether the firm has appropriately compensated those who were adversely affected.
So there are some very definite differences between the two.
Yes. And one of the issues is probably that the SEC is addressing a wider audience because they regulate not just broker-dealers and investment advisors, but public companies as well. And there are more stringent regulations that the broker-dealers have to follow, so there's a lot more guidance and rules with respect to those types of firms. So the SEC is taking into account firms and companies that some of which are subject to a lot of regulation, some of which are not subject to a lot of regulation.
So what should a self-reporting firm do? I mean, the investigation is underway. Now, what does that firm do?
Once the investigation is underway, the firm may want to tell the regulators the status, what it's doing, and how it expects to complete the investigation. And they also may want to provide substantial assistance to FINRA, for example, by making sure that all of its employees will be available to speak with the staff, even though they may be outside the jurisdiction of FINRA. They might also want to ultimately provide the results of the internal investigation to FINRA. And similarly, the SEC is looking for high-quality cooperation and truthfulness.
I guess one of the big questions has to be, is self-reporting really worth a risk?
That's a tough issue, and it's not easy to determine. It's a facts and circumstances decision. The issues are, if you do self-report, the odds are that you will be investigated, and there's a question of whether you will receive credit or adequate credit for self-reporting. On the other hand, if you do not self-report, there's a question as to how the regulators will react if and when they find out that you have a problem, you knew about the problem, but you didn't tell the regulators about it.
And what are some of the differences as far as consequences are concerned between self-reporting and not self-reporting?
If you self-report, you are likely going to be investigated. You may or may not get credit for self-reporting. If you don't self-report and the regulators find out about it, they may hold it against you, the fact that you did not self-report. They may order a higher sanction. They may order you to retain an independent consultant in order to make sure you fixed all the problems and the problems won't happen in the future.
And the SEC has actually come out with some new tools to help encourage cooperation?
That's right. Within the past year or so, they've come out with proffer agreements, which are written agreements promising individuals that statements that they make to the SEC won't be used against them, but the SEC will probably investigate what they've said. There are also cooperation agreements, deferred prosecution agreements, and non-prosecution agreements, all of which go toward the SEC trying to gather information and determining how to use that information.
The question of whether or not to self-report is a difficult enough question. Do you think the standards should be more explicit? Should they have even greater detail, you think, about expectations and consequences? Is that even possible?
I think it would be helpful if they did have more explicit guidelines. For example, if you come in and self-report and we find value from the self-reporting, your sanction will be reduced by X percent, or generally there won't be a sanction if you come in, and we'll take it into account by the SEC has what's called a 21A report, where they report of issues and violations, but they don't have a sanction attached to that. And I think if FINRA and the SEC really wanted a lot more firms to come in, then they should have some more explicit guidelines on the type of credit that firms will receive.
Have the guidelines gotten stricter over the years?
Yeah, they have. FINRA came out with its guidance in November 2008, and they had some more general statements prior to that in the sanction guidelines. And then more recently, in January 2010, the SEC revised its enforcement manual and came up with a lot of these standards. And the director of the Division of Enforcement called them potential game changers for the SEC's enforcement program.
So what is the bottom line? Do you or don't you self-report? Is there a clear-cut answer?
Unfortunately, there is not a clear-cut answer. It is a facts and circumstances issue, and the factors that we've been talking about today are some of the things that firms have to take into account and weigh. And I think one of the most important ones is the firms have to think in their own mind whether the regulators will find out about the problem if they don't self-report. And if that's the case, it may make more sense for the firms to self-report before the SEC or FINRA come to them and say, hey, what's this problem we've heard about? What are you doing about it?
What do you see in the future? I mean, what do you think will happen down the road as far as these policies and guidelines are concerned? Will more firms self-report?
Recently, we've heard about increased initiatives in the enforcement area, and at Sutherland we came out with a study recently that showed that FINRA's 2009 sanctions were almost double that of 2008, and we've also seen that the SEC has been a lot more aggressive lately, and the Goldman Sachs case is an example of that. So given the heightened enforcement activity, I think that firms are more likely to self-report than they have in the past because they realize that there are grave consequences of enforcement actions.
Sounds like incentive to me.
Yes.
Any practice tips? What would you suggest to other practitioners who are coming up against these issues and having to deal with them?
Firms and practitioners have to be aware of what guidance FINRA and the SEC have put out. So for FINRA, that means looking at Regulatory Notice 0870, and for the SEC, it means looking at the revisions to the enforcement manual, because you have to be aware of what the regulators are taking into account when you are determining whether to self-report or not.
Certainly a lot of different issues to consider when making that decision, whether or not to self-report. Any final thoughts on this, Brian?
Just that given the heightened interest in enforcement and heightened enforcement activity, I think this is going to be more of an issue that firms are going to be thinking longer and harder about in the next year or two to come.
It'd be nice to have you back to talk about some of those developments as we move forward. We'll love to have you on another edition of our LexisNexis Legal Podcast.
I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Brian Rubin of Sutherland, Asbill & Brennan. Thank you for listening to the LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Copyright 2010 by LexisNexis, a division of Reed Elsevier Incorporated. Visit the LexisNexis communities at www.lexisnexis.com/community. LexisNexis, Total Practice Solutions. I'm Steve Bursler.